Patricia Viveka, as we had a little introduction to this last night, just to go over the title again, Drik means the seer, Drishya, that which is seen, so Drik, Drishya, seer, seen, Viveka. Viveka means the discrimination between the seer and the seen. So as I talked a little bit last night, this word Viveka is very fundamental into the whole teaching methodology. It means discrimination, but discrimination between two things that are taken to be one, right? So I use the example of the red hot iron ball, where the red, the iron, and the fire appear to be one entity. Unless the fire is known as fire and the iron ball is known as iron ball, they appear to be one because the fire pervades, totally pervades the iron ball. And so if you've never seen, you know, if you don't have knowledge of both of them, then they can just appear as one entity. And so here, in our situation, there is a viveka, a discrimination that needs to take place between myself and what I perceive, between the subject and the object. Because as it stands now, the subject and object are taken to be one and the same. Which is a problem. It's a big problem. Okay. It's kind of crazy making that show. So we're suffering, a lot of the suffering is caused by that. A lack of viveka, we call it aviveka, that lack of discrimination. And so this Drik Drishya Viveka is a very well-known book called Prakarana Granta. It's an explanatory text that's right within, in harmony with the Upanishads themselves, and is just dilating certain things that need to be understood. And the Upanishads are very terse. There's a lot packed in every verse. These Prakarana Grantas, Granta means like a book or a text. Prakarana means dealing with a particular subject matter. So the Prakarana Grantas are taking certain issues, certain things that need to be understood, and just dilating them to make you spend time with it so you really have a chance to deeply understand and recognize and see. So that's what this text is. So let's just start with the first verse. I'll do all the introductions in light of the first verse.
Rupam drishyam lochanam drik.
Tadrishyam drik tumanasam.
Drishyadhi
vritaya sakshi.
Drikeva natu drishyate.
So for Sanskrit people, I'm going to break the sandhi. Rupam drishyam lochanam drik tat drishyam drik, drik, tu, manasam. Drishyaha, dhi, vrityaha, sakshi, drik, eva, natu, drishyate. So he starts right out with this viveka, with this discrimination. First thing he says, rupa, right? Rupa means form. It has other meanings. It can also be the nature of something, but when it's standing alone, the word rupa means form. And sometimes we use two words together, nama rupa. Nama means name, so nama rupa, name and form. So rupa, this is a rupa, anything that takes up space, whether on a subtle level or on a physical level, anything that takes up space or anything that can be differentiated from something else. Because if something can be differentiated from something else, then it has a form that allows it to be different than this thing, whatever it may be, right? So rupa is any form. So forms, so if I put in the plural, all forms are drishyam. They are perceived. And here we're talking about, in this first verse, the forms that we perceive through our sense organs. So any form by nature is drishyam, something that is objectified is perceived. So rupam drishyam. Lochanam means your eyes. The eyes are the drik, the seer. So just looking at this body-mind sense organs, now focusing in this body-mind sense organs, we're now focusing on the eyes, on the sense organs, right? We're going to say that in my experience, my eyes are what we call the seer, and the forms are the seen. So it's just a very simple differentiation. It's not a trick. It's just simple. I am the seer, the eyes are the seer, the forms are the seen, as we'll see. So it's here it says, rupam drishyam lochanam drik. So tadrishyam, so starting with this, rupam drishyam lochanam drik, the forms are drishyam seen, the eyes are the seer, okay? So before we go any further, let me just say a few things like that. When we use the eyes for lochanam, we're actually referring, it's one member of a set, and the member of the set are the five sense organs. So in reference to my eyes, all of these forms, or all color, are rupam. That's what is perceived. In reference to my ears, to hearing, sound, all of the different sounds are the rupa, right? In reference to my sense of touch, everything, every sensory data that I get through the sense of touch, those are the rupa. Those are the things that are experienced. The sense of touch is the drik, the experiencer. Same with sense of smell. All of the different scents are all cognized by the drik, in the sense, the one who smells. Same with taste. There's so many different things to taste, but those tastes are all taking place through the sense of taste, right? So we have one drik, one taster, many tastes, one smeller, many scents, one toucher, many things to touch, right? One seer, many things to see. So here, the most important thing to recognize here is in this seer-seen relationship, the seeing, the rupas are many. The seer is one, right? So one set of eyes, many rupas. One set of ears, many things to hear. One set sense of touch, many things to feel. See what I mean? So I become the drik, the seer, the hearer, the toucher, the taster, the smeller, and then all of these sense organs are perceived by this one entity, okay? This one sense organ. So then he goes on to say, that's true, the rupam drishyam lochanam drik, but tadrishyam, those sense organs, the sense organs themselves, are perceived. Tadrishyam, that lochanam, those using the eyes as the example for all of the sense organs, those eyes themselves are drishyam. They themselves are perceived. They're the perceiver of all of these objects, but the eyes themselves are drishyam. They're also perceived. And so you say, well, who's the drik? Who's the seer of these eyes, ears, nose, etc., sense of smell? So it says, drik tu manasam, whereas in this case, the mind is the seer, right? So my eyes, ears, etc., perceive the world of name and form, but the eyes, ears, etc., themselves are perceived by the mind. So manasam means the mind. So what he says here, just to kind of understand this, my eyes used to be 20/20. You know what that means? Perfect vision. When I was in my 20s, when I was growing up in my 20s, 20/20 vision. Now, there's a decline. As you age, it's just a natural decline. Every 4 years, there's a little downward click, you know? And so every 4 years, you should change your glasses, right? So how do I know that? How do I know that my eyes are not what they used to be? Because my mind objectifies the eyes. I'm aware of my eyes. I can say my eyes are still good, but they're not as good as they used to be. You know, or my eyes are noticing they're getting a little fuzzy. My hearing isn't what it used to be. You know, my hearing used to be great, I notice it dimming. Or I could say, you know, I notice my hearing is actually improving. Whatever it happens to be, your sense organs are something which, even though they themselves are the seer, they are also the seen, right? So they're not just the seer, they're also the seen, which is very interesting. It means that if they're the seer, then I am identified with my eyes and my sense organs there as me, the conscious being, because of me, these things are known. I'm the knower, these are known, so I always identify myself as the knower. So through my sense organs, I know these things. But then I have to realize that these sense organs, you know, that enjoy consciousness and are the knower of this physical world that I perceive through them, they themselves are known. They're known by the mind, because my mind can focus on any given sense organ and tell me all about it. How it's functioning, whether it's working as it used to work, I can objectify my sense organs. And so the sense organs really are not ultimately me, the knower. I usually consider myself as the knower, not the known. Right? If I do a subject-object relationship, I'm going to be the subject, not the object. If I do a knower-known relationship, I'm going to be the knower, not the known. But the things that I take myself to be, in terms of the knower, then I start to realize, well, these things that act and function as knowers are themselves known, which means they're not ultimately me. They're not ultimately the knower, because they're also known. They're also objectified by me. And so I might have to change my language a little bit and say that these sense organs are instruments of knowledge that I use because I'm aware of them, right? So if I have a subject-object relationship with my sense organs, I can't say I am those sense organs when I'm aware of them, I'm watching them change, I can describe them. And not only that, my sense organs can be here, if you think it really makes sense, as instruments, they're here as my instruments for my use, but I'm not always using them. So you can have the eyes, your ears, they're all highly functional, they're working, they work perfectly say, but I happen to be daydreaming, right? If I'm daydreaming, if my mind, the manas, is daydreaming, then I am now off with my daydream. The sense organs are simply not being used by the mind. So that's another way to understand that your sense organs are actually instruments which sometimes your mind is using and sometimes it's not using, right? So the sense organs then take on a different status in reference to me. They become instruments of knowledge, which themselves are known in terms of how they're functioning or not, whether they're functioning or not, how they're functioning, you can describe them. So it's important to say this isn't just an intellectual exercise, it's actually a fact. Like, this is what I was talking about the other last night, is that with the Vedanta, we're just pointing out things for you to actually notice. You know, it's not an intellectual feat to notice some of these things. Like, for instance, if I say, you know, that through your eyes you're seeing these forms, you just have to say, right. We don't have to go any farther than that. There's no real analysis. We're just describing on a very simple level our experience. So with my ears, I'm hearing whatever sounds are available. through my eyes, I'm experiencing whatever color Namarupa, name and form, is there to be experienced. So I'm just simply stating a fact. Okay, just in simple language, we're not going into science or anything, it's just a simple definition of our experience. So the same is true if I say, now these instruments that I'm used to experience the sense objects in the world, these instruments, the sense organs, they are also known by my mind. So then we say, is this a fact? Is there anything tricky about this? And we say, no, there's nothing tricky about it. The fact is that the condition of your sense organs are known to you. You are actually aware of your sense organs. So if I ask you, just check out, let your mind just become aware. Notice your eyes. How are your eyes doing? Notice your ears. How are your ears? How is your hearing? And you just to check that out and say, well, my hearing is still okay. It's still good, you know? My brother was working in a chemical factory during when he was a young man, and the chemicals affected his sense of smell. He actually lost his sense of smell, you know? Did he know that he lost his sense of smell? He really knew. And he didn't get it back. And so then he realized that because of the loss of his sense of smell, he also realized that he lost his sense of taste. The sense of smell and the sense of taste are very connected. And he realized that actually I'm only can feel the consistency of the food, you know, the quality of the food, the roughness of the food, the chewiness of the food, that I'm aware of, but I don't have the taste. And then later he said he realized that even though he doesn't have the experience of taste, his mind kind of provides it for him. You know, just through some sort of a memory, he gets some enjoyment of the taste, but on a mental level, he doesn't actually taste it. So this means that his mind is available to analyze all of the sensations that are taking place with his sense organs and the nature of the sense organs, which is true for all of us. You're very much aware of how your sense organs are functioning, whether you see or whether you've gone blind or whatever. Lost your sense of smell, or it's become heightened. All of these things you're very aware of. So what this means for you is that in this analysis is that though I usually take myself just to be one with my sense organs, I am a seer, I am a hearer, I don't usually make any type of differentiation there. Now we're asking you to make a differentiation in the sense that I am aware of my sense organs, which themselves are aware of the sense objects, right? And how am I aware of my sense organs? Through my mind. And in fact, if my mind isn't using the sense organs are just abiding there as instruments to be used at a later time. You see that? So, because we're trying to get to who you actually are, you're not really going to be your being, the conscious being that you are, is going to be the one who is essential, is the essence of the knower, not initially the essence of the known. See what I mean? So I'm not going to describe myself by the clock or by something that I'm objectifying. I want to describe myself in terms of the essence of the one who objectifies everything. So this is that movement inward. So he says, so the mind is, so in reference to the eyes are the seer in reference to the forms which are seen, but the mind, the manasa, is the seer in reference to the sense organs themselves which are seen. But then it goes, drishaha divritayaha sakshi drikeva. What he says here, though, is that the mind, which is responsible for knowing your sense organs, for objectifying your sense organs, the mind itself is known. So what it says here is di vrittiyaha. Di means the buddhi. It's a word that means just another word in this sense being used for the mind. Vritti is a thought modification. So the di vrittis means literally all the thought modifications of the mind, or we can take vritti in the plural, vrittiyaha, to mean all of the activities of the mind. Vritti actually means activity. And but when we say vritti, like divritti or just vritti, we're usually meaning a thought, the activity of the mind, which we call a thought modification. Because the mind is just one thought after another, or one emotion after another, one image after after another. So all of the functions of the mind, all the different types of thoughts and emotions and feelings and images and imaginations, anything that your mind is capable of doing, right? So let's look at this for a minute. Any perception that I have of this world, right, of the world that is given to me by my sense organs, right, actually creates a thought modification in my mind, right? So anything I smell or that I hear or that I taste is creating a thought modification in my mind, which is known to me. Any experience that I have, any thought flow, say if in meditation sometimes we say, you know, just sit and be aware of your thought flow. Here's this thought comes and this thought comes and this thought comes. Just be aware of what your mind is doing. We say this all the time. What's your mind doing? What's going on in your mind? You just sit there and be aware of it. You don't say, be aware of it? Oh, we do this all the time. We're always aware of our mind. But that means we're aware of our mind. That means that the mind itself is known. So the sense organs know the world, the objectified world. The sense organs are the seer of the objectified world. The mind is the seer of the sense organs. But the mind itself is seen. The mind is known. It means every thought that you have, every emotion that you have, every imagination that you have, every meditative experience that you have, because experiences go on changing, they are just thought modifications of the mind. All of them are known. In fact, imagine having a thought or an emotion that is not known. Then it wouldn't be a thought, right? It wouldn't be your thought. If you have a thought, that thought is known. If it's known, means there's some sort of subject-object relationship there. And so we say, in fact, in terms of the world of our experience, all of our experience is in the form of vrittis, thought modifications. They're either thought modifications that are given to us through sense perception, like whatever I perceive, like what's interesting is right now, all of us are perceiving whatever is right in front of you now. You're perceiving it through your eyes. You're also hearing sound. You're also feeling that through the sense of touch. You're smelling whatever scent is there in the room. So all five sense organs right now are in operation. And so all of these sense organs are feeding into the mind, which we call a thought modification in the mind, so that I can experience this room through my sense organs together. Otherwise, say, the ears, excuse me, the ears are hearing, and so sound is coming in, but then the eyes are seeing, you know, and then I'm touching. So all of these are disparate, they're all separate data coming in. So all of this data that you're taking and has to come into one place. And it comes into my mind, which we call in the form of vrittis, in the form of the activities of the mind, are all taking in this data and then giving me an experience, which we call a vritti, a thought modification. See what I mean? And so so the mind is busy. It itself is taking in all types of data, and it itself can become a knower of those instruments that are taking in the data. So the sense organs are taking in all of this data, which is forming vrittis in my mind. But my mind has the capacity. I can't breathe. Yeah, we need some more air. But then we'll have the wind a little bit. Yeah. Actually, if we can do that, that's good enough. We'll have to see if it works.
Yeah.
It'll be okay?
Yeah. Yeah, maybe we put something over the microphone.
But just with this that we have, it's good.
Just putting something here to protect from the wind.
Okay. We'll try it. I might be able to do, we might be able to close that. Is it open?
It's open, this one is open.
Okay. That might be enough. Let's just try this though for just a minute to get a little bit more. Is anybody else having trouble breathing? Sorry. Yeah, that's too much. We can close that, I think. If I can have that one, that'll be enough. Okay. So we're just kind of analyzing how we know what we know and what we're using as instruments, and then we're recognizing that a lot of these things that we've just identified with as myself are actually instruments that we make use of, and that I can actually come into a subject-object relationship with these instruments. So the sense organs are instruments that I utilize. I know them through my mind. They also feed in a lot of data into the mind. Right? The mind also has the capacity to have emotions, to have feelings, right? To have imaginations, to have memories. These are all activities that the mind enjoys, but all it has the capacity for. But all of these activities, plus the mind's ability to know the condition of the sense organs and to itself, to know the condition of the body, you know, all of these things, to know the sense organs and then through the sense organs to know the body and the physical world, all of these things that the mind is capable of doing are themselves known. Now, when we say something is known, that's going to imply a knower initially. It will apply a knower. So are you going to take yourself, in terms of who you are, to be the knower or to be the known? What we say we have to be, take ourselves to be the knower, because the known, whatever we objectify, whatever we know, is always changing. Every perception that we have, every condition, even the nature of the sense organs, it's always modifying and changing, and I'm the one who's aware of those modifications and changes. Just like if I say, just be aware, sit there, we did a little bit of this in meditation today, just relax, be aware of your mind, just let it, give it a break. Let it just think, let it do what it wants to do. You just, you know, as an inner friend, you just allow all of that to take place. Just be aware of it. That's a differentiation. I'm the one who's aware of all of these experiences that are actually coming and going. Right? So that's a huge distinction. If I am aware of experiences that are coming and going, I can't be those experiences. Right? Because I'm there before, during, and after. We don't usually, this is viveka, this is like an analysis that we usually do not know, do. It has to be pointed out. If it's pointed out, it's pretty obvious. But we usually, it's not usually pointed out, but now we're pointing it out. These things are known. So now what it says is, divrityaha, all of the activities of the mind, all of these different types of thoughts and feelings and emotions, memories, etc. They are all drishyaha. Drishyaha means they're all seen, they're all objectified. By who? The sakshi. The sakshi in this case is the drik, the seer. So who is the sakshi, right? Because the sakshi now, when we're pointing out the sakshi, the witness, literally means witness, knower, witness, it can't be qualified by the mind because it's the witness of the mind, right? It can't be qualified by the sense organs because it's the witness through the mind, the sakshi, the awareful being, the me, illumines the mind. The mind illumines the sense organs. The sense organs illumine, become the knower of the world of sense objects. See what I mean? So the sakshi, this me, is going to be the witness of my mind, not my mind. Right? If the mind is just thought flow, one thought after another thought, one emotion after another thought emotion, all of these experiences come and go. They're all known by me. Right? I am the witness. So what is my nature? This is the viveka. If I am the one who is the witness of the body-mind sense organs complex, then how am I going to define myself? Not by the body, not by the mind, not by the sense organs, because they're all the things that are known. You know? There's a very important logic that we use over and over again in the Vedanta. It goes like this. This is a little logic. When this shows that there's an identity between two things. It's called anvaya vyatireka. It shows identity, oneness. If I were to say, when this is, that is, then we know there's some sort of relationship. When this thing is, that is, right? And then if I say, and when this thing is not, that is not. So both the positive and the negative, when this is, that is, when this is not, that is not. Then there's a solid relationship, right? But what if I were to say like this? When this is, that is. When this is not, that still is. Then what would you say? When this is, that is. When this is not, that still is. That means there's no real relationship there. If the two things are coexisting when they're there together, but when one leaves and the other remains, then there is no real relationship. If there was a real relationship, when the one thing went, the other would have to go. See what I mean? So now what if we apply this little logic to our experience? What if I were to say, when this thought is, I am. But when this thought is gone, I'm gone. Is it true? That's never true. When this emotion is, I am. When this emotion is gone, I'm gone. We can't say that. When this perception is, I am. When this perception is gone, I'm gone. No, it's never that way. What it is, how is it? When this emotion is, I am. When this emotion is gone or replaced by another emotion, I still am. What that means is that really, in reality, I have no dependence on that experience which can come and go, leaving me. Right? Experience comes, when the experience comes, I am, when the experience goes, I still am. That means I have no real relationship with the experience. I can say the experience depends on me. Like say, for instance, here I am, so I am, this emotion has come, I am. Okay? Now, if I weren't here, whether the emotion came or not would be totally irrelevant. So the emotion definitely has some relationship with me. It's my emotion, so to speak, right? But that's not the point. That emotion may depend upon me. If I'm not there, then the emotion as well is not there either, right? But the thing is, when the emotion comes, I am, and that emotion leaves, I still am. Now, what that means is that there's somebody in me, the me, who is absolutely free of that emotion. Otherwise, it would have to drag me away with it. So this is what we call, this is a very important viveka that helps us, this little piece of logic is understood, then say when we're doing, sitting just with myself and sitting with my experiences, you can ask yourself, okay, who comes and goes and who stays? Right? Because whatever comes and goes, it's not me. It may depend upon me for its knownness, for its being known, but I don't depend upon it, because when it goes, when it wasn't here, it's here, and it goes. Right? I'm here before, during, and after. Right? And so there's something about me that is not subject to that emotional state, or that perceptual state, or that experience. If I outlast the experience, I'm free of the experience. So I think it's really important to figure out, you know, who is the one here that is not coming and going? And so what it says so far, the sakshi, it says, so for all of these vrittis, all of these thought modifications that come, I am, the sakshi is the witness of that, okay? But then it says, but that sakshi, which is the seer of these thought modifications, natu drishyate, it itself is not seen. The sakshi is not seen. So the sakshi is not seen. That's another interesting question. Does the knower need to be, we're using this word knower, it's going to collapse a little later, don't worry about it. But it's all part of this teaching methodology. Okay? But this is the question. Does the knower ultimately need to be known in order to be a knower? See what I mean? Does the knower, now here, because look at what we've done so far. The sense organs are the knower of forms, okay? But the sense organs that are gaining this knowership, we find, and they are responsible for the knowledge of forms, actually. Without them, if you don't have eyes, you can't see color. But if you don't have ears, you can't hear sound, so they're very important. But we notice that these sense organs themselves, they are known. They're not, they provide this knowledge of all of the sense objects, but then they're known by the mind as instruments, right? And so they're not going to have really true knowership qualities. They're instruments that are used for the mind to gain thought modifications of this physical world. So the mind also, we see the mind also knows whether these instruments are working or not. So they don't have ultimate knowership, but they're useful tools for giving us the experiences in terms of thought modifications in the mind. But then we notice, okay, this mind itself is the knower of these instruments, the sense objects, but the mind itself is known. Because I know all of my thoughts, all of my emotions, everything. And so who is the knower of this mind which is known? We say that's the witness, that's the conscious being, the sakshi, the witness. Now, it goes on, this verse goes on to say, yeah, but the witness itself is not known. The witness cannot be objectified. Because it has to come to that. There has to be ultimately a witness that does not require a witness. And say the witness required a witness, who would that witness be? Because we've objectified already the sense objects, and we've objectified the mind. These are all drishyas. These are all things which are known. So now, who is going to be the witness of the witness? What instrument do we have? We don't. We can't go any farther. And so now if we say, well, we're at this witness, but who knows the witness? Who knows the witness? Then the question is, does somebody need to know the witness for the witness to be known? So we're getting down to the bottom line of the nature. What is the nature of the witness? If the witness cannot be objectified, how are you going to objectify the witness? Who's going to objectify it? It's like, who's saying that witness is the conscious being because of which the mind is known. So now we want to know the conscious being. How can we have the experience of conscious being? Well, do we have to bring in another conscious being to have the experience of me? Of conscious being. That's like saying we need to bring in another sun to illumine the sun. Right? I don't think we need to bring in another sun to illumine the sun. The sun is the luminary. But then the sun is the luminary, is it lighting up itself? You can't really say no. The sun is lighting up everything, but it's also its own light, right? We don't have to bring another light to light it up. It is its own light, right? So now what about me, after I've done this drik, drisha, viveka, this seer, seeing differentiation, now here I am with the sakshi. I can't go any farther. All I can say is this mind, all of my thoughts, emotions, feelings, all of these things are known, and they must be known by me because I'm the one who knows them. Okay? But then I ask, well, who knows me? Because I don't have any farther to go. And then the question is, well, no, there's nobody to know me. There's not somebody lurking around behind knowing me. Right? And yet, I am known. I am known not as an object, but I am known just like the sun illumines itself. I am known because I am the conscious being because of which the mind is known. I am the conscious being that lights up the mind, and in lighting up the mind, am I myself lit up? In other words, am I doing a function to light up the mind, or am I just the conscious being because of which the mind is lit, because of which the mind is known? We have to say, I am the conscious being, the me, because of which the mind is known. Because there's nowhere else to go. We can't bring in some sense organs or some vrittis or something like that, because all vrittis, all thought modifications themselves are known. Right? Now the question is, okay, I am the luminary, I am the conscious being, the sakshi, because of which these things are known. So what is my self-experience? Because I can't bring in another sakshi to light up the sakshi. I can't bring in, nor do I need to bring in another consciousness to light up the consciousness, to light up me. So what that means is that this me, so just look at it in terms of your own very personal experience, your sense of me, just your sense of self as a conscious being. Okay? That conscious being that I am, okay? And so I'm not talking about anything that you have to travel and any type of mental gymnastics you have to do. I'm just talking simply. Just your own sense of me, the me that is the you that is present to whatever experience you have. Is this me known or not? You'd have to say, it's like saying, are you here or not? No, I'm not here. You're not going to say that. No, I'm not here. All of this is here, but I'm not here. You know, because nobody knows me. But nobody needs to know you, because you are the very self of the knower. You are the me because of which all of these experiences are illumined, which means that you are your own light. This me, the me that you are, doesn't need another me to come in and say, okay, I'm going to illumine you so that you can be known. And then we have to bring in another me to illumine that me. It goes into an infinite regress. It's like saying the sun needs a sun to light it, but then we need another sun to light that sun, and we'll go into infinite regress. Right? And so, now think of it like this. Even when we're doing meditation, right? Any type of meditation, you're always, you know, relaxing. I like to let get your body and mind to just completely relax, so they're not relaxed, and let the psyche and the unconscious, all of them just relax and feel happy, feel at peace. And when they feel happy, they feel at peace, where you're invoking that kindness, that inner friend, so that your body and mind can all just relax in that love, right? Because we relax in love and we become very stressful in the absence of it. So we just bring in that inner friend and let the body and mind all relax, so that actually they're not calling much attention to themselves because they're so relaxed, right? And then you just sit there just to be yourself. So we'll see later on in the meditations, I'll say, okay, John, just be yourself, okay? Nobody's there. You never had that experience. Be myself, nobody's there. No. It's the exact opposite of that. I am just there as myself without any obstruction. Mm-hmm. just beautiful me. And there's no one coming and illumining me. It's not my meanness, myself is not dependent upon anything. I need nobody to light it up. It is I am the very light itself in terms of conscious being. So in meditation you experience this all the time, but we don't really talk about the experience in this way, you know. But now we're just calling attention to it, and that in fact my own presence is the constant. It's not lit up, nor need it be lit up. I simply am. So my self-experience is a given. This is with or without any type of knowledge. You don't have to be enlightened for this, to know this. It's just a fact that your presence, you're always the shining light, the conscious being that is present to every experience that you have. And the difference between you and every experience that you have is all of the experiences that you have are coming and going. They're all changing, every one of them without exception. There's only one that is not changing, and that is me. And I am the one who is present, lighting up every experience that comes my way. And that is something that I can recognize. There's the me, my own being, that is constant, and everything else depends upon me when it is there. Comes into being, goes out of being, comes into being, and goes out of being. But I myself, the Sakshi, what we call the Sakshi in reference to these experiences, I myself am not an object of experience. I am the self-evident experience. I'm not an object of somebody, of another Sakshi. I'm the self-evident experience of me. Okay? So this will be going on about with this for a while. Let's do this next verse, and it's just going to break this down a little bit further. Okay?
Nilapita stula sukshma.
Rasa dirghadi bhedataha.
Nana vidhyani rupani.
Nana vidhyani rupani. Pashe lochana mekada.
Nila, pita, stula, sukshma, raswa, dirga, adi, bhedataha. Nana, pidhani, rupani, pashe, lochanam, ekada. Now it's just taking one by one. It says, gives a list of qualities in terms of rupa, just so you know what we mean by forms. Nila means blue. Pita, yellow. Stula means gross. Sukshma means subtle. Hraswa means short. Dirga means long. Adi means etc. So it says, bedataha, because of all of these differences, like I can just list, I can see all of these colors, the yellow and blue. I can see things that are very subtle, like space is subtle, air is subtle in terms of the physical elements. Earth is gross, water is less gross, but still gross, still more physical. Then I can say stula. This whole world that's perceived by the sense organs is stula, is physical, whereas the thoughts in my mind are sukshma, are subtle. Like say if I now I'm seeing this couch, I'm seeing it through my sense organs, it's physical, it's stula. But if I ask you to close your eyes and have a memory of this couch, I still see all of the colors and the form and the visualization of the couch. But it's sukshma, it's subtle, because it's taking place in my mind. So these are just different ways of looking at the experiences. So then it says, or I can say something is hraswa, it's very short, or it's dirga, it's very long. So I can, all of the names and forms are multi and varied. So it says nana, vidani, rupani. All of the forms that we perceive are many and varied. Okay, nana vidani means many and varied. So all of these forms are very many and varied. They're all the different colors. They're short, they're long, they're gross, they're subtle. Whatever adjectives that you can think of, they are there. They're countless. So all of these forms are many and varied, beta to have being differentiated by all of these different qualities, right? But pashet lochanam ekadam, but the eyes, remember eyes stand for all the sense organs, but the eyes that see all of these forms are only one, right? The eyes aren't many and varied. You don't have eyes over here and eyes over here. You have a set of eyes, one set of eyes, because of which all of these forms with all of their different natures are perceived. So the eyes themselves are one, the objects perceived are many, okay? So, pashet lochanam ekadam. Let's do the next one. These are just a series of things to note, okay?
Andhyaman yapatutveshu Netra dharmeshu chaikadha Sankalpaye manashrotra Twagadau yojyatam idam
Andhya mandhya patutveshu Netra dharmeshu cha ekada sankalpayet manaha shrotra tvak adau yojatam idam. So here the first one is talking about the rupas, the what I perceive through my sense organs in verse 2. And this verse it's talking about the mind, right? The mind because which is perceiving these sense organs themselves. So it says, andhya. Andhya means blind. Talking about the eyes now. Andhya. Mandhya means dull. Patutva means very sharp. So this andhya, mandhya, patutveshu, netra dharmeshu. So it says, netra means the eyes. Dharma means the quality of the eyes. So what we say is, in regarding all of the different qualities of your eyes, you could say the eyes are andhya, my eyes are blind, andhya, they suffer from blindness. My eyes are mandhya, they're just very dull, they're not taking in much light, they're mandhya. I see, but in a very dull way. Or patutva, my eyes have a sharpness, I have a lot of clarity, my eyes are very clear. So in reference to all of these qualities of the mind, whether they be blind or my eyes are blind or they're dull or they're very sharp, there's an ekada, oneness for what? Sankalpayet manaha. He says, the mind, the manas, the mind cognizes, the mind which is one alone, it cognizes, it's aware of all of these qualities of the eyes. And I can tell you, my mind, my eyes are going blind, my eyes are so dull, my eyes, I still have this 20/20 vision. Whatever the quality of the eyes are, my mind can cognize it, has a sankalpa, it recognizes it, can have a vritti, thought modification, in reference to the nature of the eyes, and can comment on that. And then it says, pashit shrotra twakadau yojatamidam. It says, and this applies yojatamidam. This also applies to your ears and your sense of touch, etc. Twak means sense of touch, shrotra, ears. Same thing, my mind can be aware of my ears, whether they hear well or not. My sense of touch, whether I'm feeling or I can't feel. My sense of taste, my sense of smell. My mind itself can have cognitions, has recognition of all of these different states of experience. So the mind remains as one, the cognizer of all of the different dharmas, all of the different qualities of the sense organs. Right? So now, having said that, let's go one more.
Kala sankalpa sandeham. Kala sankalpa sandeha
shraddha shraddhe tritare
shraddha shraddhe tritare
hrir hrir hrirte namadin
hrir hrir hrirte namadin
vasayate kadha chiti
vasayate kadha chiti.
So kamaha, sankalpa, sandeha, shraddha, ashraddhe, dhriti, itare, hrihi, dihi, bihi, iti, evam, adin, vasayati, ekada, chittihi. So now it's looking at the mind itself. So it's listing some attributes of the mind. In the mind, there's what? Kama. The mind has desires, kamaha. Sankalpa, it has sankalpas, means resolves or commitments. It makes a sankalpa is to make a resolve or to make a commitment. It has sandeha. Sandeha means doubt. It has doubts. It has shraddha. Shraddha, we'll see later. Shraddha is a, in terms of Vedanta, it's a quality of what we call faith, pending understanding. It means there's an openness of your mind to actually, where you know something is true before you have any right to know it's true. In other words, you're willing, you're accepting something on faith, pending understanding in terms of Vedanta. Otherwise you would not be able to be here, right? But thinking this has something to offer, something that is real, something that is worth my time, spend my time listening to, I'm willing to do that, I have a certain shraddha, faith pending understanding. I believe it will pay off, right? That it has something to say. So there's some sort of an intuition or some punya, you say, something that allows you to listen and to, with some openness, to gain this knowledge. And then, in the gain of the knowledge, then that's the faith pending understanding. That faith should resolve into a clarity of knowledge. A shraddha means I don't have that. I don't feel that way. And then you won't be here. Yeah. Okay. So shraddha, ashraddha. Dhriti means firmness. Commitment is dhriti. Itara is the opposite, that commitment or that lack of commitment, that resolute that resolute commitment to stay with something is dhriti, that firmness. Adhriti is that lack of that. Then there's more. They're just talking about certain qualities of the mind. Hrihi. Hrihi means modesty or shyness. Dihi means wisdom or intelligence. Bihi means fear. So hrihi, dihi, bihi, iti evam, adin. So such qualities as these, that iti means it, the iti takes all of these kamas and kalpas and deha, etc., and puts them as a list. So in this manner, qualities such as these, he says, chittihi, consciousness, which is ekada, which is one, basayati, it illumines adin, it illumines these. So all of the different qualities and emotions and experiences that arise in the mind, now he's separating it from all of the different types of thought modifications that come into the mind through sense perception. Those originate through sense perception. They also make vrittis or thought modifications in the mind. But the mind itself has many of its own qualities. It has different emotions that it can experience, different feelings that it experiences, different imaginations, memories. These are all belong to the mind. So he gives a list of all of these qualities. He says the mind itself has so many different types of emotions, different types of perceptions, different types of resolution and commitment. And all of those are illumined by one conscious being. Right? A conscious being is one. Thoughts, the different types of thoughts and manifestations in the mind. those are many, many, many and varied. So these three verses are just elaborating on this drisha viveka, where the seer is going to be one in reference to the seeing, which is many. And that keeps going, so you have the sense organs, each sense organ is, the sense organs are one, illumining many forms. The mind is one, illumining the different qualities of the sense organs, blindness, seeing, blindness, dullness, clarity, etc. And then the mind itself, which is the one knower of all of the qualities of the sense organs, that mind itself has many, many, many different qualities, all of which are known by one sakshi, by one conscious being. So, the next verse will go more into that one conscious being, but we'll see it next class.
Shanti, 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 Hari.